That was calling to order. That's agenda item one, in case anybody missed it. I want to welcome everybody back, and I will now move to agenda item two and verify that we have a quorum.
And could I borrow Ismael's microphone, please? Thank you. We do have a quorum, and let's take this opportunity to remember that we fill out the attendance slips that are on your chair, and then just leave them at your place, and we'll pick them up after. Also, even though we can absolutely hear you in this room, no problem, if you want to make a comment or ask a question, please go to a microphone so that we can get it on the recording. There's one right there and one up here at the podium. Thanks. Maybe I'll just hold on to it. Okay.
All right. Can I have a motion to adopt the agenda for today's meeting, please? So moved by Vaughn, second. Second by Pitney. We have a motion and a second. All in favor? Any opposed? All right, the agenda is adopted. May I now have a motion to approve the minutes of the May 4th, 2022 meeting? They're on page 4 to 6 of your packet if you haven't had a chance to review them. So moved Ingram. Second Douglas. So we have a motion and a second. All in favor? Any opposed? All right. Pat, have we had any requests for public comment?
We have not.
In that case, we will move on to agenda item 6, the president's announcements. And I want to start out by echoing what I said as I banged the gavel. Welcome back, everybody. It's really good to be together in this room again. We have some new faces here, and we have some long-serving University Council members, and it's just really great to see all of you. I want to start out today talking about my plans for how I'm going to use the president's announcement through this University Council session. We spent a fair amount of time last semester, spring semester of 2022, hearing about different ways we could approach this shared governance body. And what came through loud and clear was that this is a great group for people to share information. And so I'm going to be very intentional throughout this semester of using my comments to provide updates on activities related to things like IBHE initiatives and university goals that are being set or in progress, particularly those with budget or fiscal impact, because it did come through loud and clear that this would be a great venue to keep people apprised of what's going on in our multi-year planning process. So in that spirit, I want to start out by sharing today that the report from the Shared Leadership Budget Working Group that was made up of Vice Presidents Blasey, Edgehill-Walden, and Dean Brinkman is in my hand. The ideas and concerns and feedback from many individuals and groups on campuses were sought and received at every stage of preparing the report and are documented within the report. There are some clear themes and recommendations. Right now, with the draft in hand, the provost, the chief financial officer, and I are drafting a response that documents our plan for addressing the recommendations put forward with a multi-year action plan that includes tactic and timelines. And the report and the recommendations will be shared with this group and with monthly leadership meeting in October. So if you just remember that in the State of the University address and in the university goals, I charged those three with having a campus-wide conversation. Actually, it wasn't just me who charged them. It was me and the provost and the CFO coming back to us with some recommendations. They have done that. They've done a very good job of documenting the feedback. We want to make the report complete with our reactions and recommendations before we share it with the campus, and we're working on that right now, so stay tuned for October. And then, given the time of year, I think I want to talk about our fall enrollment. There are some real highlights, and there are some opportunities for us to do things better. NIU is really fortunate in that we continue to attract growing numbers of new freshmen and new freshmen with strong academic credentials. Our new freshman enrollment increased by 7% over last year. That's 155 new students going from 2285 to 2440 this fall. And notably, this is the largest freshman class since 2014 and our sixth straight year of enrollment growth. The average high school GPA of this year's freshman class is 3.42, and this is the highest GPA for freshmen on record at NIU. Nearly 20% of incoming freshmen, actually 19% of incoming freshmen, or 472 students had 4.0 high school GPAs. So about a fifth of our new freshmen graduated from high school with a perfect 4.0 GPA. Students of color represent 70% of the freshmen. This is the most diverse class in university history. And 56%, just over half, are first-generation students, first in their families to go to college. So these are very positive trends for new freshmen. It shows that our recruitment strategies are working and students are choosing NIU. That's great for our university. It's great for our housing program, which is overflowing. And anybody who's walked around campus can see the life on our campus right now. The lines at the bagel store, at the Starbucks, the students sitting at all the tables inside and outside. It is just so nice to have them back on campus. Despite these positive trends for our new freshmen, we did see a decrease in our overall enrollment. According to the official census on the 10th day of attendance, that's the official number we report to IPEDS and other agencies, our total enrollment for fall 2022 was 15,649, and this was a decrease of 585 students from last year, so that's a 3.6% decrease. We expected this. The enrollment that we see aligns with the range of projections that was in our strategic enrollment management plan. And the decrease is largely attributable to the impacts of the prolonged pandemic, particularly pandemic effects on enrollment of new transfer students and re-enrollment of 2021 first-year students for fall 2022 classes. And I want to give you a little background on that so you know that we're pretty convinced that it is the lingering effects of the pandemic that is producing this. With respect to new transfer students, our enrollment decreased by 240 students to 1,252. And this is a 16% decrease, and it reflects a precipitous decline in community college enrollment. Enrollment has been declining in community colleges for the past 5 years, but they have just been walloped since the pandemic in terms of enrollment. Because of that, there are fewer students eligible to transfer to NIU, and we're going to have to work harder to attract transfers by competing more effectively with our competitors. And interestingly, for our transfer students, some of our top competitors are private universities, not public universities, and that's because of the ease of transferring credits into the major in private universities. So understanding this, working to a new end, NIU is already working to improve our evaluation processes for awarding transfer credit. And the overall goal, the high-level goal, is to simplify and streamline our internal transfer credit processes and procedures so that students coming in can move more credits to a degree. Even more urgent and more compelling than our need to compete more effectively for transfers is our need to boost student retention. Our fall-to-fall retention of first-time full-time freshmen is at an all-time low. And the drop was associated with an atypically high number of students who had 0.0 GPAs. So these aren't students who came in academically unprepared and struggled in class. These are students who disengaged from class and campus life. If it was an online class, they turned off their cameras. If it was an in-person class, they quit showing up and they quit communicating with us. And, you know, it's interesting. I go out in the community and I talk about our enrollment. And, you know, for the 2 weeks before the 10-day count, I can't go into a grocery store without somebody interrogating me or quizzing me or inquiring about enrollment. And when I've talked about this problem with students disengaging, I've heard so many times, yep, that happened to my nephew. Yep, that happened to my daughter or my son. And so this is a pandemic effect that we are going to have to address. And, you know, when we accept a student, we accept them with the idea that they will complete, and we have to try to meet them where they are, and it's hard. Our post-COVID update to the SEM plan, our strategic enrollment management plan, is now in version 2.0. And we actually updated the plan early because we knew that we had to pay attention to coordinated students and experiences in and outside the classroom in a post-pandemic world. And we needed to try to do things that promote student success, equity, inclusion, and a sense of connection or belonging. And we are already implementing new strategies to address the students' complex needs, their unfinished learning, lack of engagement, just the challenges of navigating the college environment, and their physical and emotional health. And, you know, we're all in K-12 and higher ed dealing with students who have experienced trauma for the past 2 years. And we want them to come back and succeed. So in this context, before I ask Vice President Jensen or Provost Ingram to comment on the enrollment data, I just want to say that I want to remind everybody that in our strategic action planning framework, we committed as a university to taking a student-centric approach. And I think we just need to be very intentional about using that lens in all our decisions and actions. And I know that Saul and Beth may talk a little bit about how we're doing that at the university level, at a systems level, but I just want to take a minute and remind everybody that we can all also be student-centric with our individual actions. If you're a faculty member, you have the opportunity to look at the Center for Innovative and Teaching Learning's website and their tips for making students feel like they belong in your classroom. If you work in an office that faces students, you can remember that however bad a day you might be having, the student who came in to ask a question is scared. They don't really know what they don't know. They might not be in the right office. They might be worried that they don't belong at college. They might ask you a question that it's not really your job to answer, but you have an opportunity to be student-centric and help them get the knowledge that they need and help affirm to them that they're a member of the Husky community and we care about them. And I think that, you know, it's been a roller coaster for the past 2+ years, been lots of highs and lows and bank turns in between and very little moment for any of us to catch our breath. But as bumpy as the ride may have been for all of us, it was worse for the 17-year-olds and 8-year-olds who were trying to finish high school or start their college experience. And as we emerge from this period, we just need to make sure that we keep them moving, we keep their momentum going. So with that, I'm going to ask Vice President Jensen and Provost Ingram if they have anything they want to add about what we're doing to help our students enroll and complete. So Saul, if you want to talk to transfers, and Beth, if you want to talk to retention, that would be great.
Maybe I'll just start by saying, as usual, the president has offered already some pretty clear points. You know, I think I literally just came off of a call. We have a monthly call with all of the senior enrollment leaders at the Illinois Publics monthly. And so, of course, we were all kind of talking about enrollment. I can tell you that a lot of the challenges that we're facing here are being faced by our counterparts all across the state. And I think the benefit of that is that not only are we working hard here as an institution to focus on those, but even working not as a system necessarily, but as the Illinois Public Universities, we are working together to find best advantages that we can to really, you know, promote more students who are staying in the state, promote more college-bound, college-going rates in general. I think one of the, a couple of big pieces of research that we're seeing nationally, one is that especially since the pandemic, many fewer students are just going to college at all. And at least recently, a lot of that has to do also with the strong job market that's available to students, especially students who would have been coming from community colleges. And maybe they've had that associate's degree, would have transferred to an institution like NIU for their bachelor's degree before, but now they can get a job that's paying them a pretty high salary, and we have to compete with that. So, you know, there are many, many things that we are working on in addition to what the president talked about. I think there are also some great opportunities for us to really engage with different corporations, noting that they have a lot of businesses and organizations have employment perks and benefits that when they are employed there, that their corporations may pay for them to return to college. I think there's a lot of opportunity for us there. And we've got some great larger industries who have just moved in or are in the process of coming into our region, and we need to take advantage of that. I do think that there's still great opportunities for us as an institution to really have significant partnerships with our top community college feeders and, you know, things that are going to be very impactful for our students. Beyond just, you know, articulation agreements, which are great to have, but don't necessarily move an enrollment needle. We need a lot more engagement with our partners in the community colleges to bring in a higher percentage of the declining population in our feeder schools. So those are just a couple of additional items that I would share, and maybe the provost wants to share a bit more about keeping them here.
Thanks, Saul. Saul said President Freeman is always a hard act to follow because she's so passionate about our students. And I think if she could, she would go out and personally counsel every one of them to keep them here and do what she could to make sure they had the best experience possible. I wanted to borrow a saying that President Freeman used to use. I haven't heard her say it lately. It comes from her mother. Why wring your hands when you can roll up your sleeves? And that's what we've been doing. We noticed that our students had trouble feeling a sense of belonging and engagement last year, and I think all of you felt that too. The campus didn't feel quite the way that it had pre-pandemic. And so we started thinking about how do we get our students more engaged? How do we get them to have a sense of belonging? How do we get them to call NIU home? And I think you saw a lot of that activity going on over the summer and into the fall. We have a lot of robust activities going on for our students, and they are screaming for those activities. They've been over-enrolled, oversubscribed, and the turnout for our activities has been more than I would have ever dreamed could be possible. We have some funding this year to address emotional and mental wellness needs for our students. So going beyond the acute care that some of our students need to address more low-level concerns and needs that they might have, and you'll see some of those activities happening this year. And CITL really stepped up to help faculty think about strategies for engaging students in their classes, because that's where it's really important. Having students come to class, keep going to class, turn in their assignments, do their papers, and you know, finish up strong and proceed toward academic success and graduation. You are our eyes and ears. You are the people that see our students every day and can get a student to a service that they need or send us an alert when you see a student struggling. Let us know. Let the Center for Student Assistance know. Send a note to my office. Use Navigate and let us connect to the students. And let me tell you one quick anecdote and then I'll end. Yesterday there was a student wandering in the hallway in Altgeld, which is kind of unusual. You know, we see them on the main floor, but not usually on the second floor. And Meg Junk stopped her and said, you know, can I help you? What are you looking for? She said, I'm looking for the provost, which is also kind of unusual. But I happened to be standing there as well. So Meg said, well, there she is. And I took that student down to my office and we were able to help her. So instead of sending her off someplace else, we actually brought her in, figured out what her needs were, and helped her with the things that she was struggling with. If each of us could do that for a student, how many more students would we hang on to? So you're going to see a lot of activities this year. I hope you will participate as well. because the students want to see you at the activities. They want to see you on campus too, because that's what makes it feel like a community and feel like home. So thank you.
Beth, that was a great story to end. And I just want to say that when I go out and I talk to Husky alumni, our successful graduates, so many of them have a story where they were that student, where they were wandering the halls, where they were about to burst into tears, and someone, usually not the provost, often a dining worker or a building service worker or an advisor or a faculty member, just reached out and said, you look like you could use some help, or you look like you're having a bad day. And it was a turning point. And they remember that. And that's why they support our university. And that's what we have to be proud of as a Husky family. All right, we are now at my favorite part of the meeting, where I turn the gavel over to the Faculty Senate President, and he starts to introduce the items for University Council consideration.
Okay, thank you, President Freeman. So this takes us now to Roman numeral 7. Item for University Council consideration. So those of you who were on University Council last year may recall that one of the discussion topics that took place stemmed from lingering questions over the reimagining of shared governance and how to repurpose University Council. Among the key points members of the University Council noted during those discussions was that they value University Council as a communication tool and would like to hear more about the various committees of the university, some that report to University Council and some that do not. So over this summer, Pat and I have reached out to several committees of the university and have invited their leaders to come and update University Council on the activities of their committees. While this is still a work in progress, to date, we have scheduled about 4 such presentations that will take place over the course of this fall semester and into next spring, including today's presentation by Scott Mulberry. Mr. Mulberry is Director of Environmental Health and Safety, who chairs the Campus Security and Environmental Quality Committee. And we are very, very pleased to have Mr. Mulberry kickstart these presentations. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome Mr. Mulberry and defer the floor to you. So it's all yours. Take it away.
Thank you, Dr. Montana. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to come today to provide an update on the Campus Security Environmental Quality Committee. Some of the things I'd like to talk about, I'm going to step out because there's a little glare and I'd like to refer to the slide, but I want to talk about some of the duties the committee is tasked with. And also the membership. I also want to kind of talk a little bit more about the membership structure. Some of our accomplishments we've seen over the years and some of our plans for moving forward for this fiscal year. So the duties of the committee are to advise the president on matters of campus security and environmental quality, both interior and exterior to the campus environment. The membership is based across a a broad representation across the campus community, and the chair is appointed by the president from the membership. So I've been the chair for the last two cycles or two fiscal years, and we typically meet 7 times a year, and currently we're still meeting on Teams. So a little bit more about the membership. So there's currently 21 seats on the committee. Currently for this fiscal year, we have 5 vacancies. And the vacancies tend to be, historically, we usually have a couple of vacancies every year. They do tend to be from areas, student-centric groups. We have 4 seats on the committee that are represented by various student groups. It's probably no surprise that to hear that we do find it a challenge every year to fill some of those seats. I think, fortunately this year, I think we only have 1 vacancy. So I think we do have 3 students signed up to attend the committee, participate in this committee, academic year. We also have 5 seats that are represented by administration and finance. This is another area that tends to be a challenge to fill those seats as well. There is some discussions we've had with administration and finance leadership that 5 seats, maintaining 5 seats may not be sustainable. And there's also some concerns as to whether or not administration and finance may be overrepresented on the committee. So I'll talk a little bit about that more detail in a few minutes. So I just wanted to highlight a couple of our accomplishments. So I've been on the committee off and on for probably 20 years or so. And the committee has sponsored and facilitated a lot of good ideas over the years. So if some of you remember, there was a time when you could still smoke on campus, engage in smoking tobacco. And so back in the day, there was a policy in place. It was the quote unquote, the 15-foot rule. So when you could smoke on campus, you had to be at least 15 feet away from any building entrances, operable windows or ventilation intakes. And so at that time, the committee was tasked with putting that policy together, and that policy has since been put to bed with our current policy. As we all know, smoking is prohibited on campus. At that time, we also were the vehicle for entertaining a lot of smoking related complaints. So there was areas where you could still smoke and be greater than 15 feet away. And obviously that did field a lot of complaints. So the committee entertained those complaints as they came to us. Some of the other things, we've entertained a lot of campus beautification initiatives. We've been an avid supporter for facilities to make sure that the campus is well lit at night, the roadways and the parking lots are in good condition. I know we did some collaboration with public safety where they would go out and do surveys, and if they found that there was landscaping, you know, bushes that may be needed to be trimmed back that might be adjacent to building entrances, those would be trimmed back for security purposes. So that was a good effort. Another real good program where the idea was born out of this committee was the campus building representative program, which is in full swing now, and that's led by facilities management campus services, where they get together, they have meetings quarterly, and that's an opportunity for the campus designated building reps to come together and facilities can, you know, give them updates on various work requests, process, or capital projects, et cetera. So that idea came out of this committee. Oh, and lastly, I did want to talk about the crosswalks. So we have pedestrian crosswalks along the south half of Normal Road on campus, and we'd entertained several concerns from campus constituencies about the safety of navigating across the street. And so that's how those crosswalks, we worked with the city, obviously, to make those happen. But that was another idea that we helped facilitate as part of the discussions we've had on the committee. So moving forward, so plans for this fiscal year, we have some synergy and collaboration that we're excited about working with our campus environmental sustainability coordinator, Dr. Courtney Galler. And I've had some conversations with Dr. Galler over the summer, and we've talked about, I know she has, she's excited to move forward some of her initiatives and possibly look at putting a task force together. And so I've asked her to kind of become a guest member of the CSAQ for the fall, because I think there's a lot of opportunity to create synergy and collaboration between her efforts and the CSAQ. And, you know, it might be interesting to see what comes out of that, of those efforts on the back end of the fiscal year, because sometimes a lot of task force have the potential to lead to committees of their own, and it doesn't make sense to have, you know, two different committees of the campus focusing on environmental issues. And that also may be, may give us an opportunity to look at the membership and maybe make some changes to facilitate, you know, better representation and better efficiencies. So those are some of our plans for this fiscal year, and I'm happy to entertain any questions anyone has.
Thanks. This may be a little too specific, but I've got a little pet project that I'm working on with students to maybe propose the introduction of Narcan stations on campus. You know, kind of quick antidote to opiate overdoses. Is this like the committee that we might want to bring a proposal like that to? And it was kind of specific, so maybe I'm just hijacking this, but sorry.
I don't know, to be honest with you.
I'll give it a try then.
I mean, you can send me an email and I can, you know, we could, you know, facilitate the discussion offline and make sure, you know, what we can figure something out, make sure it gets the right attention it needs.
I will also make Matt Streb, chief of staff, who has public safety and public health reporting to him, aware, so that he liaises to Northwestern, who provides our student health. And I think that that's another group we probably want to engage in a great conversation for a good idea. So thank you.
Hi, Scott. A quick question. We have the blue lights call stations across campus, and it's my understanding those are no longer in use. Is there an update to remove those? Because I think the last thing anybody would want is for an individual to find themselves, I guess, in a situation where they need help, they panic, and they go to one of those stations and then it doesn't work. They're kind of an eyesore. If they don't work, are we going to remove them, or do you have an update?
You know, I don't. I know that that was a topic of discussion in some previous meetings, and in the CSAQ, but I thought the intent was to shut them down, but I don't know what the status of their removal is.
Hello, another quick question. And again, I'm not sure if this will be with your committee, but In the parking lot for the engineering building, there's a handicap spot that always gets massively flooded. So it's kind of even, you know, where there's not even a there's a lot of dirt buildup on there and everything like that, where I think it'll just need attention because nobody can really park in there unless it's not raining, because at any time it rains, even a little bit, it gets completely flooded. So just kind of bringing that, I don't know, again, if that would be this committee or a different one
for, you know, in terms of safety. I think it might be most efficient to put a work request in to have the physical plant take a look at that.
Sure. Thank you.
I would like to thank Mr. Mulberry for coming and providing this information. So our next agenda item is item 8, consent agenda. And there are 4 items under consent agenda. For those who may be new to this, consent agenda means I read out what these items are, and then we vote on them as a whole. Pat and Farrell, am I correct on this? Right. So the first item we have on the consent agenda is approval of one member to the University Advisory Committee to the Board of Trustees. The University Advisory Committee provide input from different stakeholder groups to the Board of Trustees, and they also meet regularly, you know, among themselves and with other subcommittees. The one new member to the University Advisory Committee to the Board of Trustees is Brad Cribe, who has agreed to join the committee for a 3-year term. Brad, I don't think is here yet, right? So I just wanted to acknowledge Brad and thank him. So that kind of conclude item 8A. The second consent agenda item under Roman numeral 8B is approval of KNPE Professor Peter Chomontoski and Human Resource Service Director of Insurance and Benefit, Liz Gers, to serve as NIU's academic and non-academic representative to CERMAC, that is the State University's Retirement System Members Advisory Committee. The third consent agenda item 8C is approval of Department of Accountancy Chair, again, Brad Cribe, to serve on the Student Mandatory Fee Advisory Committee. And the fourth and final consent agenda item, which is item C, is approval of the University Council tenure and tenure track faculty, serving on Faculty Senate and University Council Rules Governance and Election Committee, and approval of University Council Personnel Committee per NIU bylaws Article 2.1.1A and 2.2.1A. There are material on this on page 8 if you would like to take a look at that. Are there any questions on any of these items under consent agenda? Well, if not, I would like to entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda, and then we will move on to vote on them. Okay. Okay, so the University Council consent agenda items are approved. And what? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The Abstention? Okay, what's the next stage? Do we vote on this? Oh, we don't have to use no clickers, yeah, okay, that's great. I was trying to hurry up. So next on the agenda is item 9, which is unfinished business. Ms. Pat, do we have any? Right. Then we move to new business, and we have proposed amendment to NIU bylaws, Article 2.2, pertaining to University Council Personnel Committee membership and duties. And there is information on this on page 9 and 10. This is going to be the first reading of the proposed amendment, and I am happy to introduce Vice Provost for Faculty Affairs, Chad McAvoy, who is going to present these amendment, proposed amendment.
Thanks, Ishmael. Good afternoon, everyone. I believe Pat can. Oh, I can understand Scott. There's quite a glare over there, so I know where you're at. My glasses are good, but they're not that good. I'm good. I'm fine.
Oh, I can move that.
No, I'll be okay. The bylaw changes themselves are relatively straightforward, but I thought it would be helpful if I provided just a minute or two of context for the group. The University Council, the University Council Personnel Committee has existed on campus for many years, but in a different form. Previously, the UCPC was a body made up entirely of tenured faculty on campus who had a very prescriptive role in overseeing our sabbatical promotion, tenure, and college bylaw processes annually. When in 2020, when we, I don't even know what we call it, like the Great Reformation of the Shared Governance Bodies or something of the sort. In 2020, when he undertook that effort, what was previously for years the UCPC became the FSPC, the Faculty Senate Personnel Committee. There was a desire to maintain a University Council Personnel Committee, a UCPC, but without a lot of specificity or clarity on exactly what was the role of that committee. Our group is, instead of being entirely tenured faculty, is now made up of a mix of different position classifications, some faculty, some staff. And our group has spent a lot of time over the last couple of years sort of sifting through this ambiguity on exactly what is our role related to personnel issues and having a really good conversation about what value the committee could provide to the UC and the campus in that regard. And so what you see before you is our committee's attempt to provide some clarity as to the role of the UCPC as an advisory body to this group, the UC, on personnel related issues. With that, I'm happy to take any questions.
Yeah, we have one question on the floor. No, sorry. There's one.
Got a few options.
Yeah, you can use this. So.
Pass. Oh, sorry. This is my first University Council meeting. But I was just curious as to why the bylaws or the committee suggested lowering the student membership from 2 to 1.
Yeah, it's an excellent question. And welcome, by the way, to your first meeting. The committee had a lot of discussion about this. Again, the role of the committee is related to personnel issues. And so for students, that primarily manifests itself in the form of student workers and graduate assistants who in number compared to the number of faculty, the number of civil service staff, and the number of supportive professional staff are relatively fewer in number. And so the attempt there was simply to kind of better align the numbers of individuals in the different position classifications with the membership of the committee.
I have two questions. Okay. Bill Pickney.
Hello. I have a couple of follow-up questions to that. The first of those being, how long have you served on the committee?
How long have I personally served on the committee? The committee has existed in its current form for 2 years, and I've served on the committee for those 2 years.
My follow-up question is basically just wondering, how often have both of those student seats been filled? Like, is it reasonable to say that one is, you know, sufficient?
The committee in our conversation felt that one would provide students with an opportunity to participate, have a voice, and so on. We have candidly had a struggle with getting students appointed and getting students to attend. It's been a challenge.
Yeah, on the appointment side of things, I'm very familiar with that struggle. And then final question, if adopted, would these changes take effect immediately or would they be in place for next year?
That is a good question.
Second.
Very good. So Pat tells me immediately.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Dallas.
Can I put this microphone at the back of the room? Because it seems like most of us are in the back. Is that okay?
Do you want Bill Pickney to go after that?
Okay. Put it like on this table back here.
Hi, Bill.
Am I live now?
Now okay. You are. Yep.
So with this, I'm kind of wondering about our clinical assistant professors and our research assistant professors who fill important roles. While not representing large numbers, right? Their roles are important nonetheless, and many of whom serve many terms or years of service. And so some colleges have worked to create career advancement pathways in the form of promotion for those groups. And so when I initially saw the proposal, I wondered about that group and where any oversight criteria, procedures, or processes associated with promotion for clinical faculty or research faculty would fall. Would it be to this group? Would it be to the FSPC or a different body altogether? I was hoping you could comment on that.
Yeah, thanks, Bill. It's a good question. As you referenced, for context, we have approximately 25 clinical faculty across the campus. They most in law, HHS, and education. Those colleges with clinical faculty over the last few years, as you talked about, Bill, have worked on putting together promotion criteria and processes within the college to address those issues. In terms of where would that go at the university level, candidly, it's a bit unclear at present. It's an issue that the UCPC has discussed, and if a clinical faculty member had an appeal of a college promotion process, for example, as you pointed out, is the FSPC the appropriate body to hear that appeal? Is it the UCPC? Our bylaws are a bit vague in this regard. I believe it would be the Faculty Senate Personnel Committee, is my read of the Faculty Senate bylaws, as it talks about the academic personnel processes. But a challenge there is that the FSPC doesn't have any clinical faculty members that are presently a member of that committee. This issue, to the best of my knowledge, has never arisen. We haven't had an appeal of a clinical faculty member promotion case come up to the university level. It's something we've talked about in the UCPC, but don't yet have clear resolution. It's a work in progress. Okay. President Freeman?
Yeah, Chad, it would really be helpful to me, I think, given the language about the re-envisioned 2.0 UCPC, acting as an advisory body to the university on personnel issues, if you could explain the distinction between comment in the policy library, the role of human resources, who's not represented at all on this committee, the role of the staff councils and collective bargaining units. I'm not seeing where this sits in the universe very clearly.
Yeah. Our UCPC has had some of those same discussions, and we even had conversation 2 years ago with the UCPC as to whether there was a need for the UCPC to exist in this 2.0 version of shared governance. But similar to comments that both you and Ishmael made earlier in this meeting today about University Council conversation last year and a desire amongst our colleagues for to have the opportunity in shared governance bodies like this one to learn, to ask questions, and so on. The UCPC had a similar kind of conversation that the members of the committee felt strongly that the committee should live on, and those members should to be able to take on personnel issues, dig into them, hear from individuals in HR or other groups, and then to provide advice to the UC. As to exactly where that situates in, you know, how that sits into the different bodies that you reference is not perfectly clear at present.
I do think that there's an alignment issue with the two ex officio people being from academic affairs and the committee dealing with personnel outside of academic affairs and HR being absent.
Yep. No, I think that's a good observation, and one I'd be happy to take back to the UCPC for discussion this fall.
Mm-hmm. Chad, Greg. This is Greg Beyer representing the College of Visual and Performing Arts.
Greg.
As I'm reading the duties that are written under 2.2.2, I'm having a hard time understanding how these duties would differ from FSPC duties. In other words, how is it that the UCPC would be ensuring that personnel policies and procedures are up to date and adequate to the demands and expectations placed on them, properly enforced and so on? How is that not part of the purview of the FSPC? In other words, can you help us, me and us, understand how the UCPC and the FSPC aren't going to run into potential overlap or conflict?
Mm-hmm. Thanks. Certainly something we've discussed as a UCPC body. Greg, the FSPC is made up of entirely tenured faculty members, and the focus of the FSPC is around faculty personnel policies and processes. And so the UCPC sees itself as representing personnel classifications outside of just tenured and tenure track faculty alone.
Please go to the microphone.
Thank you. Might it be worth taking the time to delineate that specifically in the rewrite of these bylaws then?
Yeah, I'm happy to take that back to our committee for discussion.
Because as I'm reading it, I don't see that clarity. And your answer was very clear. Like that makes a lot of sense to me. It's logical, and I think maybe installing that some version of what you just said in these rewritten bylaws would be helpful.
Yeah. Thanks for the comment, Greg.
Hi, I have a follow-up. I'm sorry I didn't introduce myself earlier. My name's Honor Morgan. I'm the current treasurer for the Student Government Association. Has the committee considered that the two seats could be used for graduate and undergraduate students? In general, they kind of tend to go for different employment options, especially related to the skills that they graduate with.
It's an excellent comment. It's not one that our committee discussed specifically, but definitely appreciate the comment.
Any other comment, question? If not, I would like to thank Chad for walking us through this. And my understanding is you will be taking comment and everything back to UCPC.
I think given the volume of comments and the good feedback we received today, my recommendation would be to take it back to the UCPC before coming here for a second reading and vote.
Great. So we look forward to that.
Very good. Thank you.
Great. So we will now move to agenda item 11, and that will be report from councils, boards, and standing committees. And agenda item 11A has Faculty Senate Advisory Council to IBHE, and Linda Sabario will provide the first report. Thank you, Linda.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I don't have an official report today because our first meeting of this academic year is next Friday down at ICC. So I don't have any stories or anecdotes to tell you about driving through golf carts and golf courses. Actually, I told that one of the pad already. I did end up out on a golf course once in the summer, but anyway, in an NIU car, and I'm sure it's insured for golf balls. Okay, that's good. So I thought I would instead introduce myself and the FAC and what it is, a little bit about what it is that we do. I'm Linda Sabario. I'm an associate professor of Spanish and World Languages and Cultures and the assistant chair for my department. I also serve as NIU's rep on what's called the Faculty Advisory Council to the Illinois Board of Higher Education. The FAC has 36 members on it, 12 from the public institutions, one member from each institution. Then we have 12 members from the community college or the two-year institutions, and they serve on a rotating basis. I think it's a four-year term. And then we have 12 members from the private institutions. Let's see, we are an advisory council only, so we do not create policy, but we do advocate for and sometimes against certain policies, depending on the policy itself, yes. Let's see. This year, in addition to the caucuses that are comprised of the publics and the privates and then the two-year institutions, we have, let me see here, six working groups. The equity working group is going to continue this year. The student affordability working group, we are struggling, but we're pushing along there. The student and faculty mental health working group, a lot of work left for them to do and to continue with. Performance-based funding working group, dual credit and remote online learning working group, and the newest addition, which is why I needed my notes, it's a rather long one, prior learning credit practices and policies working group. Right. Try saying that one 10 times faster. Let's see, what else can I share with you? I have an alternate this year, and it's Ismael, and I think that Pat maybe just put his name on there without asking him, but I'm not quite sure.
Right.
Was he asked? Okay.
Happy to support you.
And you agreed.
That's happy to support you.
That's wonderful. Thank you. If you have any questions, if you have something you would like for me to bring forward to the council, please let me know. Send me an email. We're always open to topics for discussion. Oftentimes we will invite not only administrators from whatever institution is hosting us, but also local reps or state reps to join our group and have discussions with us. If there's something that you would like for me to bring forward to the group, please just let me know. And as always, if you're interested in serving in this role, I won't be NIU's rep forever. I do enjoy it very much, but I don't want to do it forever. So please let me know. I would greatly appreciate it. Afraid to ask if there are any questions because there were a lot of tough questions from the any questions, please. All right, wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. So we move to agenda item 11B, the University Advisory Committee to the Board of Trustees. And this advisory committee include Felicia Bohannon, Holly Nicholson, myself, Kiki Jekyll, Karen Whitby, and Brad Craig. So it is our turn to provide a little update on activities of the Board of Trustees, and I would maybe take a stab on that. So the Board of Trustees held its first session on August 18, and this was the Board of Trustees Day, and topic of the board discussion revolve around it three subcommittees. In the first, the Academic Affairs, Student and Personnel Committee, the key discussion, which we could also kind of classify as an action item, was the approval of faculty tenure and promotions recommendations for the academic year 2022-2023, and emeritus status recommendations or recognition of 22 retiring faculty. This session also saw a presentation by Dr. Vernice Edgar-Walden, who updated the board on shared equity leadership initiative that the Office of ADAI is working heavily on. The two other subcommittees, Research and Innovation, Legal and Legislative Affairs, and Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities and Operation Committees, also discuss, among others, legislative report, sponsored program, administrative quarterly report, and report on the state of NIU Press. And one highlight from the RILA subcommittee perhaps was the update on various capital project, particularly the next project that received a go-ahead from Governor Pritzker's office. And Dr. Blasey laid out the next step and the timeline towards the completion of this exciting and important project. For Finance and Audits, Compliance, Facilities and Operation Committee, that also discuss a number of financial reports. So the agenda and minute on these and the DOT agenda can be found on their website. That is also listed on the informational item section. And I know Holly is here. If there's any other member of the UAC that would like to add anything, please feel free to do so. Okay, it's great, thank you. With this, we will move to agenda item 11C, Rules, Governance, and Election Committee Report. And I'm happy to invite Holly Nicholson to present an update on cyberbullying and online harassment resource project.
Thank you so much. For anybody who doesn't know me, I'm Holly Nicholson. I'm the Assistant Director of Web Communications, and I'm also the Operating Staff Council President. And last academic year, I had the privilege of chairing the Rules, Governance, and Elections Committee, which was tasked by President Freeman to develop resources for people who are affected by cyberbullying. Oh, there it is. Okay. Last time I was over here. Okay. Here we go. So of particular concern were reports of trolling attacks against faculty at UIUC. In response to one such attack on a faculty member, they developed a web page for scholars. NIU didn't have the same resources at the time. So a policy working group had provided recommendations the previous academic year, and our charge was to explore those recommendations and how we could implement them. So first, the group consulted with Professor David Gunkel, who went over the previous working group's recommendations, as well as Professor Michelle Demery, who has done this kind of research in K-12 settings. We had a very strong committee. Everyone contributed. Everyone was very engaged. We split into three working groups. The first was for data collection. We determined that there's really not much, if any, research out there on this topic in higher education. And so we also wanted to know what the scope of the issue was at NIU specifically. So how is our community being affected by this? We had the resource development group, which was tasked with defining cyberbullying as well as creating a web resource, and then policy review to look at how this could fit in with existing policies. So the data collection group put out a survey, which you may have seen in the Monday morning announcements, and it surveyed undergrad students, grad students, and employees of all types. And we're happy to report that the results were similar across all respondent types, and that was our community is not being seriously affected by cyberbullying at this time. So we're still then in a stage where we can be proactive instead of reactive. So undergrad students, grad law students, and employees, most don't experience cyberbullying or experience it very infrequently. The most common form is digital sexual harassment or sexting. Grad and law students were the only ones who reported to have more emails that were threatening than the other groups. About half knew the person who was cyberbullying them, and usually that person was outside of the NIU community, so that's good. So to define cyberbullying, we note that it is a type of harassment. So harassment is the broader category. Cyberbullying is digital, persistent, and intention matters here. It's purposely harmful. And we included some examples as not everyone correlates the cause and effect or realizes how serious the problem is. We also consulted the new student code of conduct that was being developed, as they had a definition of cyberbullying in that as well. And I won't drag you through their website, although I think it's great, right, Saul? we thought that resources should be easy to understand for people in crisis. So people looking for these resources are, in general, they're not gonna want to dig through a lot of information. They're gonna want fast information, quick, easy to understand. So again, we included some very specific examples, and we noted that if it wasn't digital, we have harassment resources elsewhere. And then it was really difficult to find reporting information on social media platforms. You wouldn't think so, but they kind of hide it in very convoluted ways. So we pulled that out and we put it right front and center on the website. But you know, I think it was like the six or eight most common social media platforms of this time. So people don't have to go look through Facebook's terms of agreement to find out what they can do to report this. And then we have a campus contacts page, and we made sure to describe the different contacts and what their office can do in relation to experiencing cyberbullying. So, you know, we found many people don't know what EAP is or the ombudsperson, what they do. And so we explained how they could help in those situations and split it up between employees and students. And then also on the website, we included research by NIU professors because we want to get this out here and promote our research and how we're kind of, you know, in the front of this nationally now. The policy committee determined that we don't need specific policies to address cyberbullying, so they identified some existing policies which could just have some just kind of tweaking of the words to make sure it includes cyberbullying. And then the student code of conduct, as I mentioned, was already under review. So I think the review is complete now, and that language is now official. So the group also noted that aligning reporting resources and platforms would be important. There are multiple ways to report a variety of issues. And you can see this on the student conduct website. There's probably 11 or 12 boxes and just, you know, tons of places to go. And it's not always clear when to use which mechanism and where the information goes once it's submitted. So it's likely if these systems aren't interconnected that patterns of behavior could be missed. So I think aligning the reporting resources is going to be crucial. Also, there are likely other departmental policies, websites, and other documentation that aren't university-wide. They're not in the policy library or the business procedure manual. And so we identified some specific areas that could be, Saul, I'm not assigning you work, but could have potentially need to review their documentation for this. So student affairs, international affairs, ethics and compliance, human resources, and IT. I always forget that I can. No, it's fine. I'll get it. So here we go to the recommendations of the group. The first and foremost is communication. So people in the NAU community obviously get information in myriad ways. And so we want to reach the most people by having multiple resources. So posters, signage, department or school print and digital communications, campus-wide and college-wide print and digital communications, such as the One Book, digital signage in academic buildings, and social media accounts and groups, as well as syllabus language and verbal reminders from professors to students. So NIU now, since I mentioned before, NIU has some of the only research about cyberbullying in higher ed, so the committee also recommended that the research done by this group be published in possibly the newsroom or other media outlets and possibly be expanded as well. There's room for growth in the research. And we also acknowledge that other divisions that communicate with students may have communication ideas that we didn't think of. So of course, we're always happy to hear about that. And noted that individuals from all constituencies have at various times shared that they don't know what kind of mental health resources are available or are not comfortable seeking those resources out. And so the more communication about that topic, the better. And also, since digital sexual harassment was the most common form of cyberbullying reported, focused information on that specifically would be helpful as well. So another recommendation is about normalizing behavior. Reinforcing positive behavior is an important aspect to preventing cyberbullying. It's not okay to treat others poorly, no matter if you're in person or online. And we need to treat everybody as we would want to be treated. We all know that there are, again, individuals that are hesitant to reach out to mental health providers. And so those conversations often happen in a personal face-to-face way. And so just keeping in mind mental health as a topic in conversation, and just making sure, and you know, you're keeping up with your colleagues, you're keeping up with other students, you're keeping up with students in your class, having those personal relationships and conversations. And students receive a lot of information during orientation, so our recommendation is to keep this kind of information coming beyond that. You know, if you throw it in with orientation, which is kind of our first instinct, it's probably going to be forgotten pretty quickly. So there's ways throughout the student journey to reinforce it. And finally, since faculty are incredibly influential in the lives of students, faculty, if they don't already, which they probably do, they should also be familiar of how to guide students to help when they're faced with this situation. So I'm very grateful to have worked on this important initiative, and I'm very grateful for the excellent committee members that contributed to the work. So does anybody have any questions? Yes. And again, sorry about my voice. School started last week, so the children brought me a gift. Yeah, it was so thoughtful.
Fantastic. So Honor and I just checked out the site, which I looked at before. I mentioned it at the first Senate meeting. Love all the work that's being done. We did notice that of the, there are six social media.
Six, okay.
That are listed on there. One that's absent is Yik Yak. And for anybody in the room who's not familiar with that,
back.
It is back. So Yik Yak was a big platform circa 20, 12, 13, 14. It's an anonymous platform, which, as you can imagine, is disastrous. It is location specific, so the only identifier is how far other users are away from you. So I might recommend doing some research into Yik Yak because we're already seeing it take off here at NIU.
Great.
In addition to that, I might suggest adding dating apps like Tinder,
okay.
Hinge, Bumble, Grindr, etc. Mm-hmm. Those would be, I think, beneficial to add into there.
Thank you for that. Are you familiar with any way of reporting on Yik Yak? Or maybe we can consult
Yeah,
later
there's report features.
Okay. In back in my day, when I did social media for NIU, there was just no way to find out who was doing what, and it was just a cesspool. So, okay, I will note that. Thank you.
Question here. Would you like to get the microphone?
Thank you.
Thanks. Hi, everyone. My name is Wendy Vaughn. I'm a clinical professor. There's just this intersection or overlap between cyberbullying and stalking or intimate partner violence or dating violence. And so in terms of getting the messaging out to faculty about resources and help, I think that would be an important aspect of this work, especially to the extent that you said that digital sexual imagery is often reported by our students, that suggests that these are people that they're in relationship with. Stalking in particular is a very high lethality crime. And so I think a law enforcement overlay and resources for that should also be considered in our approach.
Yeah, that's great. I think we could flesh that out more. We do have a spot that says if a crime is being committed, please contact, you know, the NIU police, the DeKalb police, and such. But I think that figuring out the messaging that takes into consideration these intersecting issues is smart. Thank you.
Yep.
Any other questions?
Any other questions?
All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much, everyone.
Very, very much. So we come to item 11D, and this is Student Government Association report. And we have Dallas Douglas, who is going to present the report, as well as your name again.
My name's Honor Morgan. I'm filling in for President Majeed.
Right. Okay. It's great.
So, like I said, my name's Honor. I'm filling in for President Majeed, who unfortunately could not make it today. He sincerely apologizes, and he'll be at every other one after this. Our main priority the past couple weeks has been hiring students to fill the entire executive cabinet. We want to make sure we're fully operational this semester, which has been especially difficult in the past couple years because of the COVID pandemic. We have almost every position filled, which is really exciting, and we're aiming to be finished by the end of September in the next couple weeks. So additionally, we've been working hard on our new platform, Husky Hub. It's how we organize all of our student organizations, their events, their funding, how they want to spend their money. It really is kind of an organizational system, much easier and just easier to understand and work compared to the last platform we had. And it guarantees that all of our records are processed efficiently and students aren't getting lost in communication, essentially. A huge project as well has been training these student organization leaders to understand the resources that as a student government association we offer, and that includes funding, and we've already seen an increase in funding requests just in the first 2 weeks. As for year-long projects, we've started discussing our Mind Matters campaign, which works to improve mental health and raise awareness for mental health awareness. We're working through what we kind of want that to look like. It'll be towards the end of this semester and the beginning of the spring. And additionally, due to it being an election year, we have begun discussing what we can do to garner more student interest in at least registering to vote and then actually getting to the polls. We're considering inviting a former government official on campus to encourage students to get more involved, not just in the election process, but campus as well. Week of Welcome went fantastic. We saw such a huge increase in attendance. SGA hosted our own events too, and we were almost overwhelmed with how many people showed up. We really did not account for that in our volunteers, but that's a good problem to have. We're really excited. We've seen a lot of freshmen that did student government in high school come and reach out. And I think we have a couple appointments coming up, which is awesome.
Cool. In contrast to that short and sweet report, I've been taking notes on this meeting. I didn't write a report previously. I just kind of dumped a bunch of stuff in here, so apologies if this goes long. But for those who don't know me, hello, my name is Dallas Douglas. I am the current Speaker of the Senate. I served as Speaker last year and Deputy Speaker the year prior. My pronouns are he, him. This is my sixth year of my undergrad program. I'm double majoring in cultural anthropology and women, gender, and sexuality studies with a minor in political science. Basically, we're kicking off this semester. Running the SJ is like running a train. When you're trying to shove it into gear to begin with, it's very slow moving. So I'm currently trying to push the machine into action. There's a lot of appointments going on, as Honor mentioned. We've already had events that have been incredibly successful, but we are still seeking students to fill Senate seats. So in your work with students, if you work directly with students, I would highly encourage all of you to think about people who stand out as community leaders and students who have the time, energy, and commitment to be part of student government. We would love to have them as part of our organization. Importantly, we have a new Senate meeting time for this entire calendar year. That will be 2 p.m. on Fridays, which is much more accessible than the 5 p.m. on Sunday meeting time. We're running into a few issues with that so far, but the change was made to accommodate students who commute to campus or who work on the weekends. So far that's been a positive change. So in listening to reports from today, I was just noting some emerging issues that I'm seeing. Again, this is year six here for me, so I've got a lot of base knowledge, not just in student government, but in my own experiences. The first of those is that we have a lot of campus facilities and residence halls in particular that are just in disrepair. If we're talking about student retention, I mean, Maslow's hierarchy of needs is problematic, but I think having functional and safe spaces where students can exist in their environments without worry about their place of living being flooded or being put into a study hall to live because housing was overbooked is a pretty important thing, I would say. The overbooked housing is a particular issue that we're talking about already in the Senate. We have a resolution coming up this Friday to discuss that. As well as that, on-campus dining. We're seeing students flock to places where there's dining. The library is a hotspot because of Einstein's, and the HSC with Starbucks has always been a hotspot, but even more so now that on-campus dining is ever so steadily decreasing in accessibility and hours. I love that we're talking about mental health in this body. It's something that faces campuses across the country. I would say that the wait list for counseling is one of the greatest barriers to preventative mental health care, in addition to just investing in community, which we're doing a very good job of. Related to on-campus dining, student employment, which is something that I was kind of working on last year, is something that's still struggling a lot. If it's not possible for us to pay competitive wages with local businesses, I would encourage thinking of other incentives for students, whether that's tuition waivers. I'm no expert in student employment, but I would say that's definitely problematic that we're having places like the library now severely cutting their hours. Students are already feeling the impacts of that. And again, I'm gonna beat the dead horse, which is safety in the community, in the greater DeKalb community. There was a video that came out over this weekend of law enforcement kneeling on the back of somebody who was face down in handcuffs, which is not a good look for us. On that note, some strengths so far that we're seeing already. Week four. A lot of really, really good stuff coming out this early in the semester. We're seeing a lot of investment into Greek life, which is a hotbed for social community and events engagement. Dr. Renaud, our new Vice President of Student Affairs, is already making an impact. There's been, I would say, a cultural push towards athletics rather than away, which is somewhat unusual, but I would say a good thing. And as we've all touched on already, the increased engagement is palpable. The week of welcome was overwhelmingly successful. as I mentioned, the HSC renovations were an extremely worthwhile investment, although poorly timed with the pandemic. Students are just flooding that building every day. We work in there. I mean, I'm there pretty much all the time. The building is never not a hotbed of activity, which is so exciting to see. That said, the rest of the building is still in need of major repairs, especially for water damage. And as we know, water falls. So eventually, the newly renovated spaces are going to be water damaged as well if we don't address the rest of the building. And finally, the changes that were made last year and that are continuing to be made to academic programs and the way that we approach student academics, I would say have been positively received. And overall, though, from our critical side of things, we might see decreases in retention based on academics. I would say that the students who are engaged and who do care are really enjoying their time here academically. And with that, I will open it up to questions for either one of us.
Questions, comments?
Okay, cool. Well, I'm always available as a resource. As I said, I haven't been here as long as a lot of people in this room, but I've been here for quite a while, and I know a lot about the student perspective. So ddouglas1@niu.edu, Douglas has two S's, or you know, message me on Teams, whatever. Thank you very much.
That's great. Thank you. Okay, we come to item agenda 11.E, Operating Staff Council, and we'll be presenting report.
Hello, my name is Linda Schreigler, treasurer for operating staff. I know we're running long. It's been a long meeting, but I wanted to bring your attention that Operating Staff Council meets all year long. We have many subcommittees, and one thing that we are working very hard for is for our staff. And we're currently processing 15 checks for civil service emergency fund. We have employees currently that are homeless with children. And so we are working very hard to get them the money that we've been raising. We are gonna be depleting that fund, and we look forward to any donations to help us rebuild it. And Staff Fest is coming back. Thank you.
Thank you. That's great. The last report, is from Supportive Professional Staff Council. However, we do not have a report. So with this, we've come to the two last items on our agenda today. The first of this being agenda item 12 on informational items. And this agenda item is really what the title says. It's all about information that you can find on the agenda, and are kind of three categories. We have standing informational items on various university committees minutes. There's also, I believe you come to 12, is that the agenda? Yeah, 12Q, 2021-22 annual report. And there are also and R, which is the UC schedule of meetings for academic year 2022-2023. So if you ever wondering, you know, one of the meeting dates, you can always, you know, piggyback to this. And then we have the last category, which is kind of occasional announcement. So we have disclosure of foreign gift and contract. You can see information on that on page 11 through 14, and also call for nomination for honorary degrees. Pat and Farrell, unless if there is anything that I miss, otherwise I would say we are on to adjournment. So with that, I will entertain a motion in a second to adjourn the meeting. Okay, and second? Right. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Meeting adjourned. Thank you.